And at this time, I've been asked to be the 10-minute speaker. And, you know, there's a lot of just beautiful new faces here, and I want to welcome everyone here to this fellowship, to this this wonderful monthly meeting that we have here. And as I look out across this room, I see so many people that have been instrumental in my recovery. And I say God bless all of you, and thank you for being in my life. You know, when I first came into the fellowship, I used to be so nervous and so scatterbrained. And if you don't believe me, just ask Bob and Cheryl. And I remember I was so nervous that if you asked me to come up and do something like this, I would probably have peed in my pants. And that's just the way I was. But, you know, a lot of new people here, a lot of new faces, and I don't know who's an alcoholic. You know, we had a meeting just a couple of nights ago, and, you know, it was stated that you're an alcoholic if you say you're an alcoholic. And some people just might not know how to identify with that. And so I always like to share this when I have the opportunity. And I can remember one time Carol from Bakersfield asked my wife and I to come down and speak, and I shared this down there, and it seemed to have been beneficial to some people. So we'll see if it's beneficial to you. But, you know, anybody in here besides me enjoy drinking in the bars, you know, when they were out there drinking? You know, several of you. And maybe you might identify with this, and I know damn sure that Bear does. But the thing that I'm thinking of here is, you know, a normal person might walk into a bar and ask the bartender for a beer. And the bartender slides him down a nice cold beer, and there's foam just coming off the top, and the ice is just slithering down the sides. And then all of a sudden, here comes this great big old horsefly, and it goes bzzz, plop, and it plops right in that beer. And the normal drinker just calls the bartender over, and he says, "Excuse me," but he says, "There's a fly in my beer." And the bartender takes the bar towel, puts it over the beer, says, "I am so sorry, sir." He says, "Here, have one on us." The normal drinker drinks that one beer, and he goes on his merry way. But people like Bear, people like me, come into a bar, the alcoholic, and sits down, and he orders that cold beer. And sure enough, the bartender brings that beer, and here comes that ice just slithering down the side, and the foam is just pouring over the top, and it's hot outside. And here comes this another horsefly, and this horsefly goes bzzz, that plops right in the beer. And the alcoholic kind of looks around like this, and he takes his fingers, and he goes down inside of the foam of that beer, and he finds that horsefly. And he puts it around his throat, and he says, "Spit it out, damn it, spit it out." So, you know, that's the difference, if it helps anybody out, to determine whether they're alcoholic or, you know, social drinker that got into some problems, I don't know. But, you know, like a lot of people, alcohol caused me a problem in my life. And, you know, I could go back and I could talk about childhood fears and insecurities and all those sorts of things. But bottom line is, you know, I am responsible for putting that alcohol down my throat. And I am responsible for the actions that I had after I took those drinks. And, you know, I oftentimes used to say that I did things behind alcohol that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise. But I don't know if that's totally true or not, because I did some pretty horrific things, like, you know, some people in this room might. But, you know, the bottom line is, regardless about all the things that I did, there came a day in my life, and just briefly, it was March 15th of 1988. I was on my way to Tonyville, a little town outside of Porterville there. And I was going to be meeting some people, and I was going to be engaging in some activities that I probably shouldn't have been engaging in. And, of course, I was drinking. Well, I pulled my car off the side of the road in an olive grove, and I took out this. I had a half pint of Imperial whiskey and a gallon jug of Carl Rossi. And I busted him up against a olive tree. And, you know, like our big book says, we swear off with and without a solemn oath. And I did that. And I watched that purple stuff just drizzling down the side. And I remember one time Mike P. back there, he says, what a waste of good liquor. And I agree with him. but you know what? I remember I swore off with without a solemn oath many times. But that day, now I was a guy who was in church every Sunday. I taught catechism and all that outward looked good. But I got down on my knees in that olive grove and I says, God, I can't do this by myself. And I went to, and I didn't care if the Pope or the police chief or anybody else came by. But bottom line is I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him, like our big book talks about. And I did that day and got back in my car and I had no idea what I was going to do. But I ended up over at a man's house in Porterville that I knew was actively involved in a fellowship with Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had me come up to this meeting up here in at Three River, Springville on Thursday night. And, I don't like to drop names or anything, but Bob and Cheryl were the first people I met up there. And, all those other people, unfortunately, have gone on to bigger meetings in the sky, you know. But they introduced me, to these meetings. And many years before that, the judge found it necessary for me to go to a few AA meetings. And while I was at those meetings, this first meeting, it was over by the Parr Center over there at a church. And I was out in the parking lot. I had no intentions of not drinking. And I was by a tree, and it was November, and the time had changed, and it was dark. And here I am urinating with my left hand in the parking lot and drinking a beer with my right hand. And this hand comes over and he pops me on the shoulder and he says, you know, son, he says, you got a drinking problem? He says, it works if you don't drink. And so needless to say, I did not go into that meeting. But seven or eight years later, when I was at this first meeting up here, that man happened to come sauntering across the room and he looked at me and he says, you got a drinking problem, son? And I looked at him. And I says, yes, I do. And he says, well, you know, he says, this program works if you don't drink. And that man became my first sponsor. And that was Dan Q. And he's passed away 3 years ago, February 15th of this next year. But it just started there. And these people introduced me to the fellowship. They introduced me to the steps, the traditions, and a stupid microphone up there at that meeting. And there were people at that meeting that I believed walked as they talked. And they had something that I wanted. And so the encouragement of just coming back, you know, and that's what they encouraged me to do. And that Dan asked me at that first meeting, what are you doing tomorrow night? And I told him I had a school board meeting. And he says, well, why don't you cancel? He says, I'm taking you to a meeting, Visalia. And he did. And that's how it worked. There were a lot of you people who just took me to meetings and introduced me to service. And there were some of those who not so lovingly corrected my errors in judgment. Not that I'm looking at anybody in a green shirt or anything like that. But at any rate, I am grateful that they were in my lives at that time and grateful that they're in my life today. And you introduced me to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And I was a slow learner. I had some people who had to hurt my feelings, or I allowed my feelings to be hurt. They didn't hurt my feelings. I allowed my feelings to be hurt, you know, by some of the things that they were saying to me and some of the actions that I perceived that they had to me. And it just wasn't very comfortable there, you know. And I'd go crying on somebody else's shoulder. And then I don't know. But somehow, I kept my faith in God and I just kept doing the deal and getting into service. And, you know, different things work for different people, I suppose. I wouldn't trade what I have today. Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship introduced me to my lovely wife of almost 21 years, Susan, that I've had all this time. And she has tolerated my oftentimes inappropriate behavior. She has lovingly corrected me where I have had errors in judgment. And she has had unconditional love for me. And that's one thing that I have found, you know, in this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't want to take up a whole lot of time, but I just, you know, this morning I was thinking about so many of you people, and so many of you people are here. It's like I have the opportunity to, just because, you know, to text my friend Annetta at least once a week, just to touch base, you know. And there are so many of you that keep in touch with me on a weekly basis, and a couple of you on a daily basis. And I am so, so blessed. And I wish I had a better memory for celebrating your birthdays and so on and so forth. But it's this is just a wonderful fellowship, and I just love it to death. And with that, I'm just going to tell you what I always tell everyone when I have the opportunity to share some of my experiences, strengths, and hopes. I always tell you, please keep coming back, because I need you. I need you. And at this time, we'll take our 10-minute break. And out of respect for our speaker and Alcoholics Anonymous, please look at your clocks and be back in 10 minutes. Thank you so much. And at this time, I'm proud to present our main speaker, Paul H. from Lancaster, Quartz Hill area.
Just going to get my water. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to God, Alcoholics Anonymous, my life, and my sobriety. I'd like to thank Brent for inviting me up here. I'd like to thank God for this opportunity. I'd like to thank you guys all for enjoying a great breakfast. This is an absolutely amazing place up here. I'm actually driving up here, and I'm thinking, who is going to be up here for a meeting? This is like nowhere. And look, there's 75 people here. It's like, what do I know? Again, how many times has that showed up in my life? What do you know? Now, my sponsor used to tell me that all the time. I got sober in 1991. The very first meeting I walked into was at the Grange Hall in Quartz Hill. I walked in, there was a guy taking a cake for longer than I'd been alive, and I was like, what are you talking about? Why would you want to be sober for that long? Like, I didn't want to be sober. I just didn't want all that stuff to happen to me that happened to me while I was drinking. And I thought, you guys figured it out. You guys were having fun, having a good time. And I was like, these guys got it. They figured it out. They figured out how to drink and have fun. You know, I had passed the, you know, there's three stages of drinking. There's fun. There's fun plus problems. And then there's just problems. Well, I was well into the problem stage. And I was, what happened to this over here when it was just fun? I wasn't having fun anymore. I wasn't enjoying my life. And I needed to do something different. I got burned in a truck accident in 1989. And I was trapped inside. I was burned alive. And I died four times. When I was trapped inside the vehicle, I'm fighting to get out. I'm fully conscious. I'm sitting in 25 gallons of gasoline. I'm kicking and I'm kicking and I'm kicking with everything I got to get out. And I'm burning alive. And I have enough energy to kick the window one last time with everything I have. And I kick it with everything I have, and the window doesn't break. And at that point, I know I'm dead. It's over. I'm going to die. My feet are resting on the window, and the window just falls out from underneath my feet. Like God reached down and just busted the window and allowed me to get out. And I kicked a hole big enough to crawl out, and I crawled out. Some guy put me out with CO2. I didn't get a stop, drop, and roll, nothing. And the guy put me out. He says, it's diesel fuel, it's not going to blow. And I said, no, it's got 110 gallons of gasoline on it, run. He took off running. I took two steps away from the truck, and it exploded. Now, when it exploded away from me. Even though I was standing right there, it didn't affect me at all. I walked over to the wall. I sat down. 2 minutes later, the EMTs are asking me questions. What's your name? You know, this stuff they go through to find out if you had a head injury or not, if you know anything at all, if you're aware of anything at all. I answered everything. I'm like typical 20-year-old kid. No, I'm fine. I'm just burned. Like I'm burned alive and I'm still an asshole. Later, I had found out that the paramedics were in the intersection waiting for the light to change. We come crashing through the intersection. The burn nurse was in the intersection waiting for the light to change. We come crashing through the intersection. The ambulance in the intersection waiting for the light to change. When we come crashing through the intersection. Now I'm working step 3 with my sponsor. And I've told this to my sponsor already. And I'm telling my sponsor, what has God done for me? My sponsor's like, really? We're going to have this conversation? My perception was so distorted. My perception of how this happened today is completely different the way I tell the story. But back then, I was angry. I was pissed off. I was mad because this happened to me. How dare God do this to me? I blamed God for the reason why this has happened to me. This happened to me because I put myself in that position. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn to take responsibility for our actions. Earlier that day, my boss came to me and he said, you need to sit in this truck and help Dave get this truck down the road. I was a passenger in this truck. I was not the driver. The strange thing about this accident is alcohol had absolutely nothing to do with this accident. I was sitting in the passenger seat. It was Wednesday. It was payday. So I hadn't gotten paid yet. So there wasn't any money to get loaded that day at work. I think me and Dave had managed to scrape up a couple of roaches and we like tried to roll this joint between the two of us. We had like one on the way home. And I used a lot of other things alcoholically besides alcoholic or alcohol. My story is full of struggle and opportunity for change. When I was given the opportunity to work the steps, my sponsor, great man, you know, the opportunities that Alcoholics Anonymous has changed, has done for me. You know, when I came here, I was angry, I was bitter. They says in the book, restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, it says incomprehensible demoralization. You know, when I heard those words spoke, I went, I know how that feels. You know, we were sitting at the table talking about alcoholism and talking about us and how we know each other and how we are the only ones that can help us. We're not going to listen to anybody else. Most of the time, we don't even listen to each other. It's just like you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell him much. I can relate to that statement. My sponsor's told me that many times. You know, I remember when I first got sober and I was in the room and I'd raise my hand to speak and I'd talk and they'd go, shut up, sit down and listen. When we want to hear from the disease, we will call on you. Like, if you knew who I was, I'm going to kill you out in the parking lot later. None of that ever happened. Ego and pride. You know, my ego and pride needed to be smashed. You know, it needed to be smashed. I needed to be willing. I needed to be beaten into willingness. And when I came here, I had died four times, but I died four times because I couldn't stop drinking and using and going in surgery. I got sober in 91. I got burned in 89. I went through 10 years of reconstructive surgery from 89 to 99. So 8 years of my sobriety was in and out of the hospital going through surgery. And when I got sober the second time and stayed sober, the first time I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had died on the table. Actually, that was the third time I died on the table. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got drugged there by the guy that I used to buy dope from. He drugged me to a meeting. He's like, come on, let's go to the 6:30 a.m. attitude modification meeting. I'm like, 6:30? Like, I didn't see 6:30 unless I didn't go to bed the night before. 6:30 wasn't happening. So I'm going to this meeting. And like I said, there was a guy taking a cake long enough I've been alive. And I didn't understand what they were talking about. But I kept coming back. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work steps. I didn't follow no direction because I thought that stuff up on the wall, I was like, oh yeah, did that. I had an off-the-wall program. You know, you read the steps off the wall. So I had an off-the-wall program. I didn't follow no direction. I didn't do anything you guys suggested to do. And then they sent me to New York for surgery. And they sent me home with a bottle full of pills. There's the bottom of the pill bottle that says, as needed for pain. And before that, it says take one or two every 3 hours. I never heard the or. I never saw the one. It was two. And then I never saw the 3 hours either. It was as needed for pain. My idea of as needed is, if one's good, two's better. And I think I'm going to have pain in a half hour, so I need to have some now. Because we have to preemptive strike. We can't let it happen, right? We got to be ahead of the game. And anything that says alcohol may intensify this effect, I got to have some alcohol with this. It's going to make it better. I drank alcohol with everything. I drank alcohol when I had fun. I drank alcohol when I felt bad. I drank alcohol when I got up. I drank alcohol before I went to bed. I went to bed with a bottle of Everclear next to my bed. I didn't have to drink very much. A couple of sips, good. What is it, 95% alcohol? 190 proof? I had a buddy of mine driving to Vegas. Once every 2 weeks, he'd bring me a couple of bottles. I'd be good for a little while, a couple of weeks. You know, the disease is insane, my thinking. You know, I talk about how the distorted perception of reality for me is so thorough that I could not believe that God had ever done anything for me. Even though the evidence to the contrary in my life was indisputable. But my perception was so distorted that I needed someone else to show me the truth. I couldn't come up with it on my own. I needed working with a sponsor to show me the gift that God had given me in my life. That God had been working in my life long before I was ever willing to exist. He willing to acknowledge that He had existed. I'm telling my sponsor, what has God done for me? God has never done anything for me. Like, get real, dude. God had this whole thing dialed in for you. You're alive because God had a plan. God had a plan for me. You know, I've been burned. I've been changed. I've been able to inspire a lot of people through my struggle, my challenges that I've had. You know, the life that I have today is beyond my wildest dreams. You know, the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous to be sober for 27 years is like, how the hell did that happen? You know, you stay sober, you wake up in the morning, you don't drink. The most amazing thing for me is, look, I couldn't even go into surgery without drinking. Like, you died last time, dude. The doctor is coming to me saying, hey, check it out, man. You died the last time in surgery. You might want to not use and drink before you go to surgery next time. You died the last time. You might not make it this time. You think I could not drink and use the next time I went to surgery? No. Death is imminent. And I can't stop drinking and using. Death is completely imminent. Enter Alcoholics Anonymous. Enter a sponsor. Enter a God into my life. Now all of a sudden, I can go into surgery without using. I can go to surgery, get out of surgery, go directly to a meeting, which is exactly what I did the second round of Alcoholics Anonymous. August 27, 1991 is my sobriety date. I had surgery 90 days later. I got out of surgery. I went directly to a meeting. I went from the hospital to the meeting. I didn't go home first. I went to a meeting first. There was a guy in Alcoholics Anonymous that came down to the hospital, gave me a 90-day chip in the hospital. I had never had anyone do that for me before. I had never had anyone care enough about me to come down and show me that this thing really worked, that we really cared about you. It still brings tears to my eyes. The feeling of belonging. I never felt anywhere at home. I never heard anyone sit up and talk about the way I felt as an alcoholic, other than in Alcoholics Anonymous. That feeling of, I just felt so uncomfortable in my own skin, and here I am having to live in other people's skins too, not just mine. So I felt uncomfortable in everyone's skin. Little burn humor. Hey, if you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me way beyond what I could do for myself. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to a God of my understanding. Thank God for a God of my understanding. Thank you guys. You know, to be able to come to Springville and share my experience, thank you very much. Yeah, the tears running down my face are two things. One, I could be crying. Two, I could be hydrated. If I'm hydrated, it runs down the left side. If I'm crying, it runs down both sides. The tear duct is destroyed between my eye and my sinuses. Yours drain into your sinuses. Mine run down my face. It's actually cool because I have a meter where you guys are like, fuck, my eyes are dry. I might need to drink some water. I'm like, it's not running down my face. I better drink something. Life on life's terms. life is amazing today. Even when I perceive it as, which everything is my perception. How cool is it to have a choice today? And I was talking about that choice, that amazing ability to choose not to have a drink. Where before, there was no choice. I had to have a drink. I had to change the way I felt at all costs. Enter Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps. Step one, step two, step three, step four. Oh, wow. To actually do an inventory, to understand why I do the things I do, to share that with another human being in step five. Whoa. To get that honest and just tell the truth. I was talking to a lady over here at the table and she said she was afraid to speak. And I remember being so scared that if you found out who I was, that you wouldn't like me. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have found that the more intimate, the more free I am with the intimate details of my pain, the more people I come in contact with who feel the exact same way. You know, just recently, I shared in a meeting about being molested by another man while I was out being... This is 4 or 5 years ago. I talked about it in a men's tag meeting. And I shared that. And right after I shared it, there was another guy who shared the exact same thing. He's like, that happened to me too. How often does that happen to us in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? We're scared to share our pain. And we're meant to share our pain with you. How can we be of service to others if we don't teach others how to deal with our pain? You know, our pain... I don't know about you, but when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't feel much. If there was a feeling, I masked it. I covered it up. I found a way not to go through it. And I had to get sober. And I had to learn how to feel. Learning how to feel was not a fun experience for me. I mean, especially being me. Me, walking out in public. You know, kids are like traumatized. Kids are like the easiest thing to deal with. It's the adult. Don't say nothing. He's there. Like, the parent is scared to death that the guy's going to be offended about their kid. The kid doesn't know any different at all. The kid is like, hey, check it out. This guy's different. It's cool. What is different about him? They usually come up and ask, hey, what happened to your ear? Like, they don't even know why. And I always take the opportunity to teach the kid about fire. Hey, check it out. I got burned. This is why you don't play with fire. Not that I was playing with fire when it happened to me. But hey, if I can prevent the kid from burning, rock on. Yeah. You know, kids are awesome. Kids are amazing. They're just wonderful in their search for knowledge. Which is a complete new perception on reality. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I used to go, everybody's staring at me. You know, today I'm like, great, everybody's staring at me. Awesome, I'm the center of attention. Like I always wanted to be the center of attention. Be careful what you pray for. You just might get it. See, I didn't realize until I got sober that I prayed for this shit. I just wasn't specific enough. Like, you want to be the center of attention. Poof! You're the center of attention. Everybody's seeing you now. You can rent out your chest. Advertising. Everybody's looking anyway. You know, I have a lot of friends that I don't even notice it anymore. It doesn't bother me. I have been sober now longer than I was not sober. I got sober when I was 23. I'm 50. So I've been sober 27 years. I got burned in 89. So I've been burned longer than I wasn't. So most of my life has been like this, which is actually amazing. The coolest thing about me is that I never get older. I look the same. Now, I physically get older. Let's not get crazy. But I don't look older. I'm going to come back in 10 years. You guys will be, he's not lying. He looks the same. My skin is so tight from being burned that you can see how it pulls my face when I turn. My kids make me do this all the time. And I can't believe I even thought of this from the stage. Why am I even thinking this? My daughter goes, Dad, do the butt dance. I'm like, oh, come on. If I turn around and raise my arm, it moves my entire butt. And my daughter goes, come on. And 15 of her friends are in the house. Hey, Dad, do the butt dance. And they're all cracking up. Today I get to have fun with my experience. Today we get to have fun. We get to enjoy life. We get to make the best of our experience. You know, we get to share stuff with others and teach them how to go through the same experiences or stuff that's maybe not that hard. You know, today being of service is everything. Having the opportunity to get up here and share my pain with you and the gift of what I've learned from it. You know, I've learned to have fun. I've learned to make the best of it. I've learned to laugh. I've learned to forgive. I've learned to feel. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, none of this would be possible. You know, I sit in a room full of strangers and I feel at home. How is that possible? How is it possible for a guy like me that couldn't say no with death imminent to just decide not to have a drink? You know, I know there's some new guys here. Welcome to the greatest opportunity of your lifetime. You have no idea the gift that is before you. This gift, I got here when I was 23 years old. Everybody in the room was way older than me. Way older. I mean, I was sitting next to a lady right over here. So I didn't get sober until my 50s. Like, I'm 50 now. I just entered my 50s. Now, thank God I got here at 23. I wouldn't have made it to 24. As a matter of fact, the doctor said I wasn't going to live past 40 if I did survive. God has a plan. You know, the doctors also said I wasn't going to be alive long enough for my parents to get to the hospital, 45-minute drive. I lived. God had a plan. My dad said I was too ornery to die. He probably wasn't wrong. my best friend, Nick, said I was too stupid to die, and he probably wasn't wrong either. I just found that out the other day. I've reconnected with a buddy of mine from high school. I haven't seen him in 25 years. And I saw him at the place I get fuel where I work. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me a lot of things. It's taught me how to be a son. It's taught me how to be a father. It's taught me how to be an employee. It's taught me how to work. It's taught me how to be a father. It taught me how to buy a house. It taught me how to write a check. It taught me how to be responsible. How to take action without questioning the results, which is very difficult for me still, because I want control over the results. I have no control over the results, but I want control. Not that anybody in here could probably relate to this. Like, I want to know that what I'm doing is going to work. Having been sober for as long as I have, there are a lot of actions I know are going to work, because I've done it enough times for the results to happen. But when I was brand new, and they said, get a sponsor, work the steps, your life will get better, I had no freaking experience. It's like, what do you mean? Get a sponsor, work the steps. It's too easy, it's never going to work. It looked easy. And it's simple, yes. Easy? No. And the reason why it's not easy is because I'm an alcoholic and I think I have a better way. And what do? We try everything else first. It doesn't work. And we go crying to our sponsor, oh, I'm hating it again. Did you try the steps? No. Did you follow direction? No. Did you get loaded? No. Thank you, God. And every single time I work the steps, it works. Every time. It has never not worked. Not one time has it not worked. Every single time, if I'm in pain and I get in the steps, solution. Piece of cake. Oh, imagine that. You feel better. You work some steps. You be of service. What is it? Step 1 and 2. Trust in God. 1, 2, and 3. 4 through 9. Cleaning house. 10, 11, 12. Working with others. Those are the 3 things we have to do. Well, we suggest that you do, because you don't want to tell an alcoholic to do anything. If he's like me, he's going to be... You're telling me to do something? I'm for sure not doing it now. We should do this. Do not work the steps. That's what we should do. Do not get a sponsor. Don't do it. Well, I'm going to go do that for sure now. Yeah, what is it? Reverse psychology. But, you know, we're so arrogant, we're still not going to do it. It's amazing how many people are actually here. I mean, God is everywhere. God is the reason why I'm here. You guys have worked in my life. You guys, God speaks to me through you. God has kept me sober for 27 years. Alcoholics Anonymous speaks to me through you. God is the source of all of this. Recently, I have been inspired to start reading the Bible. And it's amazing how what is in the Bible is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, I've seen that before. It's on this page. I've seen that before. It's worded a little differently, but it's the same basic concept. I'm like, huh. So this has been around a whole lot longer than what Bill and Bob dumbed it down for us to understand. You know, like my buddy said, I'm too stupid to die. I'm too stupid to grasp the basics of the Word of God in the Bible. But you bust out Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, textbook. It is a textbook for a reason. It's meant to be studied. And I read the book, and I... Yeah, have you ever noticed? Some of you have probably read the book a bunch of times. Every time I start reading the book, I go, where was this the last time I read it? Like, I know for sure that I've read this page before. Why did I not get that out of it this time? It's the reason why it's a textbook. We have to keep going back and referring it, because it's not the pages on the book that are different. It's me looking at it from a different perspective, for a different perception, because I have grown, I have changed. It's not the book that's changed, it's me that's changed. You know, it also says in the book we have to be vigilant in our recovery. Vigilant. Like, if you've ever looked up the word vigilant, if you're an alcoholic like me, you're always looking for a way out of something they're telling you to do. And there's no getting out of the word vigilant. There's no loophole. There's no way out of it. Like Mr. Wordsmith, Bill W., knew what he was doing. Like the word vigilant. There's no getting out of that. There's no, I have to stay in the process on a daily basis if I want my life to continue to move forward. I can stop. I can stop working the steps. And what will happen is my insanity will return. We've seen it happen in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've seen it happen. I've seen people with 25 years get drunk. I've seen people with 25 years be more miserable than they were when they first came in. I've seen it happen. And it scares me to death. It gets me to open the book. It gets me to be of service. It gets me to work with others. Like, there's a guy here, I don't know what his name is, but he goes down to the recovery home and he picks these guys up and he brings these guys here, and these guys get to learn to be of service, and these guys get to build some self-esteem. They get to build some self-worth through helping others. And they get to feel better about themselves. They get to learn this from Alcoholics Anonymous, just like I did. You know, we talk about service like it's a difficult task, when service is a gift for us to do. I get to be of service. It's amazing how when a new service commitment comes up, how nobody volunteers to jump in. Yet the person who has the service commitment gets the most out of it. It's like, what are we afraid of? Are we afraid of the gift of the opportunity to help others? For me, it's always some distorted perception of reality, is I'm afraid I'm going to fuck it up. Excuse my language. I'm trying to work on that. And my significant other over here is always pointing it out. and I am grateful today. At least I'm telling myself I'm grateful. I want to be grateful.
You better be grateful.
Well, anytime there's change that I want to occur in my life, I have to instill some kind of pain involved, because I am a pain-motivated individual. I just am. Let's get real. I've learned this about myself. I learned that if there's not some kind of pain, I'm not interested in changing it. Seriously. You know, I don't drink caffeine of any kind. Why? Because when I do, my back hurts badly. So I don't drink it. It's pain. I'm so clean, it's sickening. Like, I don't drink soda, I don't drink caffeine, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do sugar. It's sickening. But I feel great. Imagine that. I take care of my body, I feel good. What a concept. The whole reason why I drank was because I wanted to feel good. It made me feel good the first time I drank it. And I chased that feeling the whole time. It removed all that fear, all that pain, all that... You guys know. I don't have to explain to you what alcohol did for me. Alcoholics Anonymous has done way more for me than alcohol ever did. And I get to remember it. I get to remember it, and I get to take that experience and share with others. I get to show this guy up here, hey, check it out, man, it can happen for you. It can happen for you. You're going to have to put some work in. It's going to make you uncomfortable. At some point, you're going to wish you didn't do this. But nobody said it would be easy. They said it would be worth it. And it is definitely worth it. The life that I have today, man, you know, I get to ride motorcycles with my son. You know, I get to watch my son win races. You know, I ride motocross. I ride dirt bikes with my kid. My kid's been racing since he was about 9. He's now 17. He jumped over me about 3 years ago. The torch has been passed. It's a kind of an interesting story. I'm signing up for races, and Dad's like, my son, he's like, Dad, let's sign up for the Open. Let's sign up for the Open. Because all the motocross races are based on age. They won't allow you to race against someone else who's not the same age. Well, he wanted to race against Dad. And the only class you can race against Dad in is the Open class. There's no age bracket. There's no bike size. It's completely open. Doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter what your age is. Doesn't matter what bike you're on. It's open. He's like, come on, Dad, let's race in the Open class. Because he knows he's going to wax me, right? He knows it. He's like, come on, let's race, let's race, let's race. Say, all right, let's race. Well, I killed him on the start. Smoked him. See ya! Left him in the dust. 3 turns later, he's showing me a wheel. Here I am. Here I am in the next corner. Here I am in the next corner. We get to the big triple jump, and I ain't jumping it. Are you crazy? I'm going to die. There he goes over the top of me. Later, the next time I saw him, he was 2 turns down the road, gone. I was holding him up. He waxed me. I was like, Go, Junior, yeah, that's my kid right there. How cool is that to be able to experience that kind of stuff? I get to experience that stuff today. If it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would never get to experience that kind of joy. Being a father. Actually being a father. My kids have never seen me loaded. They don't know that guy that was out there drinking and using. That guy doesn't exist for them. Effectively, Alcoholics Anonymous has killed that guy. The only one who can bring that guy back from the dead is me. All I have to do is not follow direction. Don't work the steps. Don't pray to God. Don't trust in God. Do not work with others. And the insanity will return. And I'll drag that motherfucker right out of the grave. And there's really no other way to describe it. I mean, let's get real. I'm grateful that I'm not that person anymore. You know, that guy wouldn't have said, sure, no problem, I'll drive to Springville. Not on your life. Not unless there was definitely something in it for me. And there is something in it for me coming up here because I've learned being of service, I get to feel better about me. But back then, I didn't understand that. I had to get something from you first before I was going to do anything. You know, today I get to give first and then receive later. It's the law of reciprocity. I have to give first and then I receive. And I don't get to know how I receive. I get to take the action and leave the results up to God. Because God knows what's best for me. Since when have I ever known what was best for me? Have you guys ever seen that movie? What is it? I think it's a Jim Carrey movie where it's like he's like God or something. What was the name of it? That's it, Bruce Almighty. Where Morgan Freeman says, since when has anybody known what's best for them? You know, Jim Carrey's talking about, I just gave him everything he wanted. And Morgan Freeman, who is actually God in the movie, says, since when does anybody know what's best for them? You know, we don't know what's best for us. We think we know what's best for us. Which my sponsor says anything after I think is suspect. If I think, stop there. Don't even go any further. You're not allowed to think. I'll let you know what you should be thinking. This is what he told me in the very beginning. And he was right. He was right. I've since learned how to think properly. But in the beginning, no. This thing could not be trusted. It was definitely coming up with shit that was going to cause me pain, for sure, guaranteed. Maybe even kill me. Or someone else. You know, they were right. They were absolutely right. When they said, sit down, shut up and listen. We want to hear from you. When we want to hear from the disease, we'll call on you. And now I'm that guy in the room telling people, sit down, shut up, and listen. When we want to hear from the disease, we'll call on you. Ha! It's too much ego and pride, huh? I get to inspire others. I get to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to help others. I get to be of service. I get to work one day at a time. I get to share this amazing life that I've had with others. Oh, I still got 10 minutes. How cool is that? Cool thing is I looked. Like I care about doing the right thing today. How amazing is that? How really amazing is that? I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me such a different way of thinking. Like I care about others. I don't know about you, but the default is not, what can I do for you? You know, if I don't work the process on a daily basis, I just don't automatically think, let me see, what could I do for somebody else today? You know, it's all about me, man. I think about me first. I think about what's in it for me. And I have to keep coming to meetings and share with others and be reminded that, hey, check it out, dude. It ain't all about you. I'm not up on stage for me. I'm here for you. I'm here for the new guy. The new guy that's what the hell am I doing here? What's my life going to look like? Great, the party's over. Stuck with a bunch of 50-year-old people. Check it out, dude. I race dirt bikes. I ride Harleys. Water ski. I do stuff that I've never, ever, ever in life would have been able to accomplish. I've been to places like Necker Island, which is Richard Branson's private island. Very freaking cool place. You know, Cancun, Mexico. Like, get real. I wasn't leaving Lancaster, let alone this country. I couldn't get far enough away from the dope man. Definitely couldn't get that far away from the bar. Let's get real. I couldn't afford to go to the bar. I went to this liquor store and bought it. I couldn't afford the bar. It cost too much money. I couldn't drink like I wanted to drink. And I couldn't drink like I wanted to drink and stay conscious without methamphetamines. And drink myself right into a coma. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done everything for me. And I'm grateful. Does that clock even work? That's twice I looked up there and it looks exactly where it was. Maybe I should look at my... Oh no, I got 10 minutes. Maybe I should look at my phone. You know, the steps are the key to everything. The steps are the roadmap. How cool is it for us in Alcoholics Anonymous to actually have a roadmap to follow? Normal people out there are screwed. They got to figure it out on their own. We got a step-by-step process that guaranteed will make our lives better. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Like, they're screwed. They don't have a guarantee. They're like, check it out, dude. Figure it out. You're on your own. Alcoholics Anonymous, work the steps, and your life will get better. Nobody said you're going to get rich. You will feel better in your own skin. You will like who you are when you look at the mirror. Today, I like who I am. You know, I remember looking in the mirror, wondering who that was looking back at me. The very first time I looked at myself in the mirror after I was burned, I screamed because I did not recognize who was there. It was horrifying to me. So it did not surprise me when other people ran from me. Well, it did surprise me. And I actually had that happen to me. I was out of the hospital 90 days. I was walking in the grocery store. And this is before I got sober. I walked in the grocery store, and my dad worked at the grocery store. He was a store director. So I was actually going to his office. So I'm walking down the aisle, and I get to the end of the aisle, and there's this lady and his daughter, and they come around the corner. Lady and her daughter. They come around the corner. We almost ran into each other face to face. And they took off running like I was Freddy Krueger. Now, I turned around and looked down the aisle to see if I should be running too. And there was nobody there. And I was like, what? They were running from me? I didn't have a gun. I mean, literally took off screaming. Ah! Later, I'm like, what is that about? It's horrifying to think that people perceive you that way. You know, it hurts like hell. I make a big joke out of it now, but then it didn't feel that way. It hurt like hell. You know, I know what it feels like to feel pain. I also know what it feels like to feel joy. And the cool thing is we have contrast in our life. Being alcoholics, we have massive contrast. I mean, how often do you see people out in the real world, they're normal people, and their idea of bad is like, I bounced a check. I got a speeding ticket. My world's coming to an end. Get real. You're kidding me, right? Like, that's your idea of contrast? No wonder why you feel like shit. I'm like, I burned alive, man. Today is way different than that. Like, my perspective is, if I'm not burning alive, it's all good. True perspective on shitty, right? Most of us, our contrast is that far away. You know, we're like, check it out, I went to prison, man. Being in the free world is free. It's awesome. I get to choose when I want to go to the bathroom. I don't have to ask permission. How cool is that? Normal people out there are like, screwed. We have huge differences. That's why we're laughing. That's why there's a bunch of us in here having a great time. We're enjoying life. Eating breakfast on a Sunday morning at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting together. Thank you, God. You know, man, God has done everything. It says in step two, that we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. No, was it? Yeah, step two. Step three, we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. And at the end it says, as we understand Him. Now when I first got sober, my understanding was, I believed that you believed that there was a higher power that was working. 27 years of evolution have happened to my belief. And my understanding is a constant, never-ending evolution. Because the longer I stay sober, the more I believe that there is a higher power that has my best interest at heart. And I get to trust in that higher power on a daily basis. I struggled in the beginning with that belief because I didn't believe that He had my best interest at heart. And it took my sponsor to show me that God had my back the whole time after I told him the story. And I told you about God having my back. Like, my sponsor is like, this is how we did it. Okay. You were in the truck and you got yourself out? Oh, you didn't get yourself out, right? You had expended all of your energy and you broke the window? No, God broke the window and let you out. Oh, right. And you had the paramedics, the ambulance, and a burn nurse from the Sherman Expanded Center waiting for you. Like you called them ahead of time and told them you were going to be there, right? Oh, right. You didn't have anything to do with that either. Oh, God didn't do that for you. And you had the guy run down from the local Denny's with the fire extinguisher to put you out. Like, God didn't do that for you either. And the mere fact that they sent you to the number one burn place on the planet was within helicopter distance. This is not a God thing. And I'm like, well, when you say it like that, it makes me sound like an asshole. Because I was. Completely. Distorted perception of reality. God had had my back long before I was willing to admit it. The evidence in my life is indisputable. There's no arguing. God was there. If God has been there for me, when I did not deserve it, I had nothing coming. I was the guy that would knock you over the head for $5 in your pocket just so I could get loaded. I did not deserve to be saved. I did not deserve it. Thank God for God's grace. Grace is a gift you cannot earn. It's just given. Grace. Gift. I cannot earn. But I'm damn sure not going to squander that gift. I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to do my best to be of service so that I can be worthy of such a gift. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you.